Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast on public policy analysis and program evaluation. In this episode, we're going to formally launch our study in this area, and for purposes of simplicity, I'm just going to call this evaluation, because at the end of the day, public policy analysis is a form of evaluating whether a policy is a good choice or a poor choice, or really an adequate choice in any way whatsoever to address maybe the goals that we're looking at. And evaluation is obviously evaluation. As you will note, in reading through the first chapter of this textbook, we have a lot of ideas about evaluation, but we also have some pretty specific definitions of what truly constitutes evaluation and then the different forms of evaluation. So I will do my best in this episode to get you through the slides that go with chapters 1-3. I'm going to talk a little bit more than maybe what is captured on the slides to help highlight those main points from the first three chapters of the textbook, and then talk about some examples, you know, add to what is already available to you through the reading of the material and the slides that I'm providing here, maybe with just a little bit more discussion, a little bit more context to think about it. Now, if you choose not to listen to this podcast as a supplement to the course, you're still going to be fine as long as you read and understand the material, and in looking through the slides, you feel like you know what is covered and what is highlighted on those slides aligns with your learning from the chapters. If it doesn't, that would be a great time to either add the podcast in as a supplemental learning tool or to contact me and ask for follow-up in relation to whatever you're finding, you know, gaps in terms of understanding or in terms of the course materials. I'm happy to add more if more is needed. Just gotta get that feedback from y'all about what's working and what isn't. So please, at any point in time in this course, do email me with that feedback. It's jemille@wsc.edu. Anytime you need to get me a message. Email is honestly the best way to get a hold of me because I check it far too often and try to respond as quickly as possible so that everyone can kind of, you know, maintain and go about their lives at their own pace. Okay. If you haven't yet, now is the appropriate time to go back to Canvas, to our course website, and to navigate your way to the week one roadmap page or the section one roadmap page, depending on how you are taking this class. Maybe you're doing the 5-week, in which case it should be the week one roadmap page. Maybe you're doing a regular semester, in which case you should be looking at the weeks 1-3 or chapters 1-3 roadmap page. Again, this is talking like introduction to evaluation, a bit of the history, and then a lot about ethics, because we've done some pretty unethical research in the past, not necessarily just in terms of evaluation, but yeah, social science, definitely a learning process with the whole ethical limitations thing. So please get those slides open. Should be titled the chapters 1-3 slides. Maybe has the label at the end of it, PDF copy, just so that you know what you're opening is a PDF. And when you're there, let's go ahead and proceed. Now, I've already talked us through slide 2, which covers the objectives for these slides. So let's begin right off the bat with chapter 1 and what it is that you really need to get out of that chapter. First things first, the general definition. Evaluation is the act of determining whether something is worth it, in my own words. Now, you and I do this every single day in our lives, and that's actually going to be captured on the next slide with the everyday types of evaluation. But the thing that is going to set this course apart from perhaps maybe the evaluation we do on a daily basis is we're going to be systematic about the way that we do evaluation. We're going to set a plan in place. We're going to follow that plan. We're going to report about the plan and how well it worked in terms of the evaluation. That's a really good evaluation. And that contrasts pretty distinctly, at least in my life, with some of the ways I approach everyday types of evaluation. So this is slide 4 right here, where I'm talking about purchase decisions. Is it worth it to spend money on something we want? When we are in the throes of Amazon Prime days, I am unfortunately sucked in because the prices go down. So that purchase looks more worth it, let's say. That is a common thing that we do. Is it worth it to pay for this item at the grocery store versus that one? Is it worth it when you're in dire financial straits to have to figure out how you're going to juggle the bills that you have? That was a truth in my life at one point in time. Pretty difficult time. And you are doing evaluation there. Is it worth it? Will we get the outcome we want? Is this going to work? Now, we do the same thing with time. Is it worth our time? Is it worth our effort? If anybody has ever been involved in a group project, academically or in the professional world, that question about effort really depends on who else is participating in the project. Am I right? I mean, sometimes you don't have a choice. You just got to take one for the team. But boy, it really does make it more worth the effort when you feel like the team members are on the same page that you are. So, okay, that little deviation aside, evaluation in this class, we're talking about whether something is worth it at the end of the day, and we're going to use a planned, aka systematic approach to look at answering that question. And when we get into our formal projects, which a lot of y'all have already started to dig into with your project survey, we need to figure out what programs or policies we're going to be evaluating. Because this, again, not like everyday decisions or everyday evaluation about purchases or time or effort. We're going to investigate something specific, something that is defined, and something that has particular goals or attempts to address a certain problem, because that is what evaluation should be telling us. Did it address the issue? Did it serve the goals for which it was created? Or is there an alternative approach that might get us those same outcomes or the same good process that we really wanted in the first place? If you are trying to identify what is meant by policies or programs, I want to be as clear as I can be, which is a little muddy in this area because we're talking about public policy and public policy programs. Public policy is anything that the government does. And for this class, I'm going to say anything that the government formally does. Formally here is going to mean that the government sets up specific procedures or rules or process in relation to achieving some outcome, okay? We're not going to talk about what informally gets done, like how does Congress negotiate among its members or between the members and the president. That's an informal process that involves a lot of phone calls, a lot of bargaining, a lot of negotiation, but there's no formality to it. In the sense that we don't have like a clear description of the roles, the processes, the rules people have to play by, that makes it really hard to evaluate. So, formal public policy. This could be examples like the Department of Education's Pell Grants, right? Public policy, it's a formal policy/program that offers money to students. You could utilize the Remain in Mexico policy as a formal policy because what was spelled out by the government were the steps in the immigration process and how it needed to function in order to work the way it was intended. There is a wide, wide range here of what can be considered public policy. We run the gamut. From energy policy, environmental policy, education, war, defense, criminal justice, anything that you can think of that the government really does is a public policy, which can be one of the things that you focus on in this course for your policy slash program project evaluation. I don't think that's the formal title on Canvas, but I just don't want to, I want you to think about this as the bigger paper slash presentation project that you'll be responsible for at the end of the course. So public policy is that big, broad thing that government does. And we need to be clear, the public part of that explanation means it's done by the government and not by a private entity like private individuals or private groups or companies or corporations or anything like that. We're looking at what government does. Now, separate from this is the concept of a program. And your textbook does give a formal definition for program. They say it's a group of activities or small focused interventions or organization-wide projects or statewide initiatives or national reforms and policies and or international programs. Wow. First of all, that is a, again, very wide range of things that qualify as a program, so to speak. And it uses its own word to define it when we get to the last thing about international programs. That's problematic. It's circular. So a program in this course is going to be a little bit more focused than maybe just general public policy. But either way, if you have something that fits in these kind of big categories, it should be something that you can evaluate for this course. Now, the book does give some examples, the first year experience courses or the Too Good for Drugs program, but there's others that I want to throw out here listed on slide 7. Number one, Head Start, an early learning program. This comes about as a result of Lyndon B. Johnson's War on Poverty, actually. And it's quite an effective program if you look at the overall outcomes and what it was intended to do. A contrast to that, Scared Straight Boot Camps. This used to be the stuff you'd see on TV, like literally the show Scared Straight, I want to say was the title. And we know from evaluation of these camps, while they may look really effective on a TV screen, they generally don't serve the purpose of reducing recidivism or the likelihood that someone is going to recommit a serious offense and likely return to prison. A third alternative, the WIC Women, Infants, and Children program, which is food supports that exist in addition to other food support programs like SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. In the realm of environmental policy, we could talk about cap and trade programs, which was about limiting how much we have in terms of carbon emissions from different companies or different industries. And then a fifth alternative, any type of counseling or mental health services, which are formal services, are programs. So literally all of these, crossing from education to criminal justice to social welfare to environmental to healthcare, they're all programs that can be considered for evaluation in this class. Okay, I have jumped ahead in my discussion around public policy and went well past what is already captured on slide 8, so I want you to read through that. And then again, review what is included on slide 9 regarding the discussion of the evaluation proposal. And just make sure if you have questions about this that you email me. I will be providing feedback to everyone regarding their project survey. So please look for that in the near future if it's not available yet. And one final thing I want to throw out there literally from the get-go. What you are developing in this class is an evaluation proposal, meaning you are coming up with a plan for how you would evaluate something. You are not, repeat, not responsible for actually carrying out the evaluation. So you're not going to have to try and build a year's worth of research into 5 weeks. You're just going to come up with a plan for what you would do if you were to evaluate that program. So it's not like you have to really sift through a huge amount of data at this point or conduct innovative and expansive research like surveys or interviews or anything like that. We are just doing a proposal, which does not mean you have to carry it out. You do have to have the plan that you would use. Again, email me with questions, but if you haven't already, please read the assignment guidelines on that. And with that, I'm going to kind of quickly go through the last six slides about what is critical for the first elements of this class, aka the first three chapters. Number one, you need to know evaluation, and you need to know the different definitions like formative evaluation or summative evaluation, needs assessment, outcome evaluation, implementation, all of these different types. And on slide 10, what you see there is a listing of the important terms to know and define. Please absolutely know and define those terms. And it's pretty easy, generally with this textbook, because all of the terms are listed on the sides of the page. So in the edge of the page, closest to the literal edge away from the binding of your book, if you have the physical book, or if you have the electronic book, you'll see it kind of on the sides, either the left side or the right side, depending on the pages. There is a bolded term and a clearly written definition to explain that term. Or at least that's what we hope, is that the definition is clear. And sometimes, I will say, there are some that don't necessarily make it super easy to understand, but that's a great time for you to begin supplementing what's in the textbook by looking things up. Yes, do Google things. Be smart about the Googling and be willing to go beyond the first page. If it's something that's a little more complicated, generally speaking, we need to think past page one of a search function. This is something I recommend to literally everyone I know. Quite often, some of the best results you're going to find are not on that first page. So push through. Don't be that person who just always goes with whatever the Google AI or other AI tools tell you, because some of that is definitely going to be limited and even wrong. And I can say that just because I have that experience of making AI hallucinate. It was a fun little experiment with ChatGPT nonetheless. That being said, of course, these models are improving, but again, push through, look into more of the concept if you're struggling with it. Okay. Moving to chapter one focus, this is slide 11. Again, getting those key terms, that is the most important thing you need to grab there. But do keep an eye out for the perspective of our author and what kinds of pushes the author is making for us to have or embrace regarding evaluation. Number two, as in chapter number two, we are on to slide 13. This is the history of evaluation. And the history of evaluation has some different ages, as described on pages 38, 39, at least in the first edition. There's also a lot of ethics and research issues that are covered in this chapter. I want you to think of this more as that background information, at least until you get to the end of the second chapter where we talk about resource sharing and dissemination, and they identify what is known as the What Works Clearinghouse. So it's really good to know the history, especially when it comes to the ethics, because this is where we often run into real life issues with evaluation. If the research that we do, if the approach that we take reflects an unethical methodology or unethical behavior, people pick up on that immediately. And I can promise you again, from the real world of evaluation, that is going to shut things down more quickly than you could ever really imagine. Let me give an example. For a state of Nebraska agency, I was asked to conduct a series of interviews with different elements in the agency, different groups, field staff, administrative staff, support staff. And in trying to conduct those conversations, a lot of people brought up unethical behavior that had happened in previous discussions. Let's say someone had spoken with them and promised to keep their comments anonymous or not to reveal them at all. And then later, those individuals found out, of course, that had actually been violated and someone had been told, and there were repercussions for whatever they had shared. Because maybe they had shared something very truthful, but painful or difficult for others to hear. that is a rather classic example of not adhering to good ethical boundaries, especially when you have made promises to people that you will protect their identity or protect the information that they are sharing with you. And that does fundamentally change the way an evaluation is conducted. It takes a lot more time to build up trust with groups who have lots of experience or maybe just severe singular experiences with backlash from evaluation processes. So, you know, the chapter two stuff is going to get into some extremes like the Nazi experiments and our Tuskegee experiments. Not good stuff. But ethical violations don't have to be that severe. They can be much more limited and still have really important implications for being able to conduct and carry out an evaluation. Going back to the last component in Chapter 2, that What Works Clearinghouse, go ahead and check out that website. What does that resource offer you? And does it give you any ideas? Let's say if you're struggling to put together your project ideas or project proposal, does it come up with something that maybe you're interested in doing a little bit more research on or about? I do want to note that What Works is largely tied to educational sciences. So if you're more interested in something like, let's say, criminal justice, look for evidence-based or evaluations of criminal justice programs, and you'll be sure to find some things that are out there. Specifically, I'm thinking of the Office of Justice Programs and some of the websites that they create, or maybe the Bureau of Justice Statistics and some of the evidence that they have compiled on different programs and policies that are currently in action across the United States. All right, folks, we are rapidly closing in on the end of these slides and this podcast episode. So, with respect to Chapter 3, what you'll note on slide 15 is that I have talked about how pages 73 and 74 are relevant for our second critical thinking prompt or discussion question, however you choose to frame it. It is about the ethical responsibilities of evaluators. The entire chapter is with the competencies being presented on those pages. And I just want you to consider, how realistic is that list of competencies? Do we know people who embody and embrace all of these, who could demonstrate all of these, or are we asking a lot with evaluators? And you might be able to sense from my tone, I think we do ask a lot of evaluators. I don't think that's incorrect, but it is very difficult at times to walk the walk, so to speak, when you're doing an evaluation that can have real implications for people's lives, people's jobs, or even some of the programs that they depend on in their daily life. So please, as you evaluate that, focus on ethical responsibilities generally. Keep in mind some specific components. And here I'm thinking most critically of the Belmont Report and the principles that are articulated in the Belmont Report. Hint, hint, might be something you see on the exam. In addition to that, check out the section on the Common Rule and make sure that that feels pretty comfortable for you as a topic matter. And if not, do let me know what questions you have. Okay, let's wind this episode down with that. As always, please email me with any questions or concerns you have, and I will be happy to get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.